Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are Canada's video game radio show here on 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's indie station. If you are listening to us on a terrestrial, you know, more standard method of listening to us known as the radio, or perhaps you've gone new school and have decided to listen to us online through our website, thearcadeshow.com. We welcome you. Either way, I am Mike the Legend here for you. On Friday, May 11th of the year 2012. How are you doing, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? Welcome back.
Yes, we welcome you back to the arcade. And this week I am Dennis, who thinks the Avengers was amazeballs.
Oh.
Yes, we're going with that sort of lingo to describe the Avengers, the movie.
That's some very colorful language you are busting out.
I think as colorful as we can possibly get on the radio.
It's borderline blue.
Yes.
I'm a little shocked, and needless to say, some old grannies who are listening are, well, they've just fainted.
Yes. Since we clearly appeal to the old granny demographic, we play video games. I know my grandmother can't get enough video games. She's playing Call of Duty right now.
I'm detecting at least a small hint of sarcasm.
Yes, as you should, since that's not actually true at all.
The old granny game-playing demographic is really one that is underserved by video game-centric radio programs. And I really think that's a segment of the population we can appeal to.
Well, we can try, but not this week, because I have to say, once again, The Avengers was amazeballs.
You, much like a few of the other hundred thousands or so of the populace have seen it and now formed that opinion?
I think it's more than 100,000, but yes. I agree with the quote-unquote 100,000 that, yes.
100,000, hundreds of thousands, millions.
I think it might be millions, just putting that out there.
However many was out there. Well, you know, I'm sure the numbers are skewed slightly. There was the ability to go see the Avengers in 3D, which charges a bit more, and that just throws off the numbered ticketing system, I'm sure. And
yes,
actual attendance figures.
I did not see it in 3D. Not to that.
Wise choice.
Yes.
Excellent, but did it live up to everything you had hoped it would be?
Yes, I thought so. How about for you?
Well, you see, friends, if you haven't had a chance to check out the Avengers, it really does live up to 5 years' worth of hype.
And now...
That is all.
And I do think it actually managed to keep me interested in the next round of movies that will be connected with the Avengers.
Yeah, it'll be certainly interesting to see where they go and what direction they'll do and try and as they work towards the next Avengers, which apparently, yes, it's official, as if there was ever any doubt, was announced this week by the Disney executives that, yes, there will be another Avengers because money!
Yes. But as long as they're making stuff that's good, I don't really care.
I really don't see a problem with it. So long as I have to insert this caveat, so long as Joss Whedon is back on board with the next one.
Yes.
I found this one very nicely done. Had a lot of, if you follow Joss Whedon's work at all, which you probably should...
At the very least, Firefly. Like
at the very, very least. You know what? If you don't have the time commitment for Firefly, we will also accept Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Yes, just for a nice little
appetizer.
Just less than an hour's worth of your time.
Exactly. It'll whet your Whedon appetite. And then you should move on through the Whedonverse, Joss Whedon universe, his... back catalog of efforts, and then really Firefly. You need Firefly in your life.
Yes,
everyone does. And he really just took a deft hand at crafting the story. You know, considering you have 5-6 very capable heroes that could just bust out and destroy everything at any moment, presumably, I found as a viewer did a really good job of keeping you intrigued. That yeah, they are actually in danger. They're not just a dominant force.
Yes.
That will lay waste to everything.
Yes. And I actually like that he managed to keep things on the comic book side while still maintaining a very movie feel.
Yeah.
Like, some very choice shots. I don't want to spoil anything because there's a really funny scene between Thor and the Incredible Hulk that was right out of a comic book. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it. If you've seen it already, if you agree with me, please let us know. TheArcade at kick.fm or drop us a line on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
It's, that is just one of also many comedic moments throughout the course of the movie, which, considering it's a big budget superhero team up disaster action movie, it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's pretty damn funny. And on that note as well, just make sure you stay to the end of the credits.
Yes,
like all the way to the very end of the credits. Not just the title scene listing all the actors' names at the very end. No. The very end of the credits, when they list all the 18 different production companies that and animators and preparatory visual artists that worked on the movie, and when they go through and say that this is a work of fiction, any similarity to between characters in this and any real people are purely coincidental, blah blah blah, because
color by Technicolor, etc., etc.
Yes, exactly, that kind of thing. After that. Stay for that piece of goodness.
Yes.
It's a delicious little bit, and you will laugh.
Yes, we won't spoil anything, even though I think the internet tried already, but it's worth seeing. It's really funny.
That it is, and so certainly something to look forward to in the next few years, as apparently next year is when Iron Man 3 will come out, and I believe Thor 2, Captain America 2 after that, and how they'll all work into the next big evil that the Avengers have to face? Time will tell.
I actually want to see a new Hulk movie with
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk, since he actually seemed like the most legit of the Hulks so far, of these last couple of guys who tried to play the Hulk, in my opinion.
It was one of the rare times in the, recent movies that, yes, the Hulk was well done and interesting.
Yeah, and like, he seemed very scientist-ish when he wasn't the Hulk, but when he was the Hulk, he was smashing stuff up. Which, I think they sort of missed the point a little bit with one or the other of those aspects in the past couple of movies.
True. Certainly, I think we can just toss out the first Hulk movie entirely.
Eric Bana. Yikes.
That was... Well, I mean, ultimately, the Hulk should not be facing a giant electricity monster in his first big movie effort. That is also apparently his dad in the movie. Oh, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the first Hulk movie from...
don't even bother.
From 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yes.
Mutated dogs and a giant electricity monster.
And an emo Hulk. A very emo Hulk. I mean, he was always kind of an emo character anyways, but... Too emo, in my opinion.
There's certainly a lot of brooding going on. And apparently it's hard to get the Hulk right, although Mark Ruffalo makes it look like, no, it's entirely possible.
Yes.
He knows his stuff.
And I'm just putting that out there, but I'm pretty sure Wolverine was a member of the Avengers at one point in time.
This is true. The Avengers as a team has, they've had a lot of rotation through people.
Yes.
Come in, come out. Spider-Man has even been an Avenger as well.
Yeah, and there is a new Spider-Man movie coming out. Nothing on the word of the X-Men, or any of those, that whole side of things.
From what I understand in the readings of the internet, if they are to be believed, apparently they're working on getting ready to shoot a sequel to X-Men First Class.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, they'll keep that vein of the X-Men going, but I'm pretty sure what we saw of the original X-Men movie trilogy, that's done.
Yeah. Though I have to say, it would be cool to see Hugh Jackman back in the Wolverine role again. That's all I'm saying.
That apparently will happen in the future, but the big, full X-Men team of what we saw, probably not.
Yeah, which is kind of a shame, since they built up some good momentum with the first and second one, then kind of killed it with the third one.
I if we can take anything away from that third one, I'd really like to see once again Kelsey Grammer as the Beast.
Yes, that was perfect. But maybe follow the storyline they set up a little bit better. But yes, it appears that we've more than wasted our intro amount of time on this program, but I think it's well worth it since we also like comic-related things on this radio program.
Indeed. We have wide-ranging interests, and again, we've spoken in the past of Joss Whedon, our appreciation of his work, and we've even had Firefly as a blast from the past as well, and so it all just seemed to tie together nicely, although I have to point out, of all the, I guess, you know, normal merchandising efforts with big Hollywood blockbuster summer movies, no Avengers video game.
Which is interesting.
Very strange. There's an Avengers pinball, I guess, video game that Zen Pinball Games has done. But, yeah, no normal, what you would think, Avengers game. Very strange.
Yes.
Why? Well, we don't really know why. There just isn't. Just putting that out there. I have nothing more to offer than that. Just
yes, we're looking at you, big game companies.
Ooh, something's wrong with you, isn't there? Don't like money. But nevertheless, yes, we have wasted a goodish amount of time on this program, though, in fairness, not nearly as much time as we wasted dissecting Spider-Man 3.
Yes, well, The Avengers was not a movie that required dissection. It was good.
True.
Spider-Man 3. Oh.
Spider-Man 3, ultimately we did an autopsy.
Yeah.
To see what killed that. And anyone who's seen Spider-Man 3, which we're going to go out on a limb and say probably a lot of you have seen Spider-Man 3, you will fully understand what we are talking about.
If you are in our age range, I have to say that's the caveat. I don't want to bring up old memories about Spider-Man 3, but I was talking to someone who's a little bit older than me who liked it, who was a comic book fan from back in the day, quote-unquote.
Ah.
And, yeah, they liked it, and I figured there was no point explaining why I thought it was awful.
So you're saying a bit of a generational gap exists?
Yes. That's all I'm saying. But yes, if you're in our age range, that is to say late 20s, early 30s, you will probably agree.
If you can remember the Spider-Man cartoon from the early to mid-90s, watching that on Saturday mornings, then yes, you'll know exactly what we speak of.
Yes.
But we move along from that, long and short of it, Avengers is awesome.
Indeed.
If anyone didn't think it was awesome, or as you so put, non-eloquently put it, amazeballs.
Yes.
Do feel free to let us know your thoughts on it, your counterpoint. Thearcade at kick.fm is our email address, or our website, once again, thearcadeshow.com. So we shall move along from that into this, which this is now the ludicrous leadoffs.
Yes, those couple of news stories that ease us into the regular swing of things because they're just a little bit more ridiculous than everything else.
Yes, the ones that you just can't quite put your thumb on because, well, maybe they don't have anything that you can put your thumb on to. They're just, they're that.
Yes.
That kind of thing. And we have two this week that aren't entirely video game related. Our first one, especially not video game related, but neat, interesting, and from the worlds of both, well, medical advancements and overachieving young kids.
Yes. Now, apparently, Connecticut has at least one overachieving young kid.
Who is not Doogie Howser?
No, not Doogie Howser. Although she might as well be, 13-year-old girl Mallory Keevman, again, as I said, from Connecticut, has come up with a cure for hiccups.
Yes, beyond just hold your breath.
But hold your breath, keep your diaphragm in place, and hope it doesn't, you know, hope nothing disturbs you or makes you laugh for at least 30 seconds. No, no, vinegar lollipops, apparently. I don't want to think about that one too much.
Oh.
But and it clearly sounds like something from the mind of a 13-year-old. But yeah, vinegar lollipops.
Apparently, she hit upon this idea of a vinegar lollipop when researching various at-home remedies to try and deal with the hiccups. Apparently, some of these included, well, taking a teaspoon of vinegar, ingesting or sucking on a hard candy, and she also went on to research the physiological reason for a bout of hiccups as well. Now, when she was speaking to the New York Times, because, you know, 13-year-old girls speak to the New York Times.
Well, when they have a cure for the hiccups, a previously thought to be uncurable thing, which, you know, is kind of a big deal, I guess it sort of makes sense.
I guess it's allowable, certainly. She told the New York Times that the vinegar, quote, triggers a set of nerves in your throat and mouth that are responsible for the hiccup reflex arc, end quote. Overstimulating those nerves cancels out the message to hiccup, and voila, no more hiccups.
Yes.
But okay. I can't say I would have ever in my time on this earth even come across any sort of anecdotal evidence, any sort of suggestion that when you have the hiccups, take some vinegar. Never. Yeah. Never have I ever heard that.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they're mixing it with some candy here. And like the second part of this story is that Mallory Kiefman got together with a team of MBA students from the University of Connecticut and tried out over 100 different recipes. And it looks like they're trying to bring their product to the market in the form of Hiccup Pops.
Clever name.
I'll buy that name.
And apparently this isn't just something that's often, you know, going to be coming far off in the distance. They're looking for a release of this product in the summertime.
Yeah.
That's how close they are to bringing this to fruition. Now, Danny Briere, who is a founder of Startup Connecticut, which is a company that nurtures new companies in the Connecticut area, met Mallory last year at the Connecticut Innovation Convention, which was a competition for kids, which also awarded Mallory awards for both innovation and patentability. And he went on to say that he's confident Hiccup Pops is one of those essential products that could be on the markets for decades to come, and has in fact taken on Mallory as a client. Again, Mallory Kiefman from Connecticut in the good old USA is 13 years old, and she could probably make a damn lot of money.
Yes, and as Molly Oswalks of Gizmodo.com aptly commented, she said, "Sorry, Mallory's classmates, you're definitely never winning the school science fair now." Which is very, very true. I think you might as well just give up. Unless all of her other classmates are as overachieving as she is.
This is true.
Then we might see a bunch of crazy stuff happen. Somehow I don't think that's the case, but...
You know what? I'm sure one of them, if that is the case, I'm just gonna go out on a limb. One of her other classmates, to top her, cold fusion. That which they said was impossible, he will make possible.
Yes, and he'll discover that it had something to do with a ham sandwich and mayonnaise. But that's neither here nor there.
So to Mallory Kiefman, 13 years old, from Connecticut, we salute you for coming up with vinegar lollipops. Again, a cure for hiccups.
Yes.
Ugh.
Now, moving from hiccups to something a little bit more, well, depressing, for lack of a better segue here.
Yes, we move from the physiological effects to perhaps more internal dealings and internal matters that can be dealt with. This story is actually video game related.
Yes.
And deals with how a video game can impact not just, as we've documented on this program a number of times in the past couple years, a video game being used to rehab stroke victims, elderly, anything like that, dealing with your external self. Instead, this is dealing with a new way that a video game can treat one's internal self.
Yes, treating teen depression, more specifically.
Indeed.
Coming from New Zealand, researchers and teachers in New Zealand, they came up with this game called Sparks, which stands for Smart, Positive, Active, Realistic, X-Factor Thoughts, which couldn't possibly be more ridiculous to say, I don't think.
It's not the most eloquent of names. It's It works as an acronym, but it's not catchy. You know, it just doesn't have that mass market appeal, but ultimately it's not going for a mass market appeal. This game Sparks that they've developed down in New Zealand, actually, what it does, it simply put, teaches teens to shoot down and label negative thoughts as a means of relieving depression, and can do so, apparently, in some trials, it can help relieve depression at least as well as traditional talk therapy. This according to a new study of this game Sparks, which is pretty damn good.
Yeah, there's sounds like an interesting enough game. Players choose an avatar and navigate through seven realms of a 3D fantasy world, where in each realm they learn classic mental behavioral skills for combating depression, such as problem solving in a part of the game called the Mountain Province, for example, and another level where they fight through a swamp of where they're assaulted by black smoldering balls called gnats, which stands for gloomy negative automatic thoughts. And there's a quote here from researcher Sally N. Mary, PhD. She says, "These gnats fly at the avatar and say negative things like, 'You're a loser.'" Yeah, that's the quote. So, yeah, you're supposed to shoot them and put them into barrels that classify them as particularly kinds of negative thoughts. And if gamers get it right, these gnats change to sparks. These sparks, which are glowing balls that look like fireflies, complement the players and balance is restored.
Now, each realm that the player goes through takes about 30 minutes to navigate in all, and players are to complete one or two steps of the game, or one or two, realms of the game, each week for 3 to 7 weeks, during the course of their treatment. Now, researchers used psychological tests to assess depression before, during, and 3 months after the study, which was funded by New Zealand's Ministry of Health. Now, they studied both standard therapy and, or found that both standard therapy and Sparks, the game, reduced levels of anxiety and depression by about one-third. And the video game helped more kids recover from their depression, actually. About 44% of subjects achieved remission in the Sparks group compared to 26% in the more standard care. This research is significant, according to the researcher Sally Mary. She says, because the vast majority of depressed teens never get help, saying, quote, "Around 80% of young people with depression never get treatment. When you do the calculations of how many therapists you need to actually meet that demand, it's enormous." End quote. She thinks it's a video game like Sparks, which doesn't require supervision, that could help fill treatment gaps, particularly in undeserved areas. And it's a private way for kids who may feel wary of talking with an adult to actually go and get help for their problems. So, a really neat and very, innovative way to actually apply video gaming to, well, a bit of a troublesome area, if you will, a difficult area to properly treat and, help everyone out there with, as, well, mental health has always a bit of a difficult field.
Yeah. There, I mean, if you can make it easier for people to get treatment or make treatment more accessible in many different ways, I guess, without as much stigma attached to it or what have you, I think that's a good thing.
It certainly is. Now, I'm sure there's going to be more research, more studies done on this this Sparks game. The initial one that brought about these results only had 187 teens in the test group. Now, that's not a large number by any stretch, so before this thing is more widely, prescribed, for lack of a better term, hopefully they'll have much larger sample groups to pull from to, be more definitive in their answers. And perhaps they'll find better treatment levels, better results, but some positive things that gaming can do are all around us.
Yes.
And that's all we have for the Ludicrous Leadoffs.
Yes,
the medical edition.
Yes, now, not speaking about positive things about video games, but instead speaking about negative things about video games, our first real news story here is a bit of negative news. regarding what looks to be an awesome game.
It certainly is, and kind of goes along with a theme we've had for the past couple weeks here, talking about games and their release dates all kind of congregating around the October, early November release window. Now, one of the big AAA titles that was slated for this fall was going to be the latest game from the Irrational Games studio, that one being BioShock Infinite.
Yes.
Wasn't long ago that the game was announced to be coming out in this fall in late October. Well, a funny thing happened between, you know, then and now. As it would turn out, it's not coming out in October anymore.
No, it's coming out a little bit later.
In fact, it's not even going to make it out this year.
Yeah, when I said a little bit later a couple seconds ago, I lied. It was about a few months later.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you've been waiting for BioShock Infinite, you better hope there's no apocalypse this year.
Yes, you better hope that Earth makes it to the end of 2012 and into 2013 and past January of 2013 and into February of 2013.
You know what? Just hope we make it all the way to the end of February in 2013 because
near March of 2013.
Yes.
Are we going to say the date?
I was just about
to. Going
to
keep bandying about.
Well, I was actually going to go into it, but you kept bandying about. So
I wanted to keep bandying about. I think it's funny.
I understand that, but if you can wait, if you can hold your breath until then, February 26th of 2013.
Yes.
That's not quite October.
Well, at
of
least
2012.
At least Irrational Games' director Ken Levine had some excuses for us. He said,
that's such a negative connotation.
Well, really, you can dress it up like saying, oh, well, he's rationalizing it with the game. No, it's excuses. He's saying, when we announced the release date of BioShock Infinite in March, we felt pretty good about the timing. Since then, we've uncovered opportunities to make Infinite into something even more extraordinary. Therefore, to give our talented team the time they need to deliver the best Infinite possible, we've decided to move the game's release to February. Yeah, great. So, you had some problems that you didn't anticipate, and went, oh crap, we need to push it back. I'll come up with something, don't worry.
Now, the interesting thing is, because there's so much more time available between now and February of next year, normally you'd expect to see the game in some form, either at E3 later this, or in a few weeks' time, or at Gamescom, the big German video game convention. Normally a game would pop up at one of those two or both of those events. No, Ken Levine has also said that no, they're not showing the game at either of those.
Yes, and again, more excuses. He says, oh no, that way the next time you see our game, it'll essentially be the product we intend to put in the box. Preparing for these events takes time away from development. Because apparently, they don't have PR people working for them. They only have developers working for them. You know, that's a nice sound business model for a bigger company like that. Just have developers, don't have any other people.
Now, normally, you know, you'd think 2K games Rockstar Games, the whoever they have as the developer would come to them and say, all right, what do you have? Do you have some videos? Do you have some in-game, what, concept art? Something. What can you give us that we can take to the show and hawk this product?
We need to show a bit of a trailer video to get people excited. Do you have a trailer video? Oh, no, we're assuming that they have...
Get out! You're taking me away from development!
No, we're assuming that there actually is someone coming to talk to them. Some advertising savvy person. No. They only have developers in this magical world where this game exists. Only developers. People who work on the game and do nothing else but put stuff into the thing that's eventually going to be this disc that you get and put into your Xbox or PlayStation or computer. That's all they have working for them. Including Ken Levine. He was taking time away from development giving those excuses to the media. I mean, he could have been making a 3D character model or making a tree or programming something somewhere, you know?
Now, with that line of thought that you're beating to death, would it... Now, this is a thought that occurs to me. Don't don't you think that, considering the game was, as of a few weeks ago, slated to come out in October, and now it's a few weeks later, don't you think that they'd at least have something a bit more closer to a finished product, a bit more polished, and with only a few months left between, you know, now and release date, or initially between, you know, then and release date, you're pretty much, I'd think, in a spit and polish kind of, you know, position. I mean, you can't really be developing anything brand new from the ground up. I mean, in theory, the game would just be in a state of needing minor tweaks, minor adjustments, and then putting it off to the spit and polish department, and then they put it in the pretty box. Because there's, you know, a few months is not a great deal of time to, I don't know, revamp something, add a new character, change a design, add brand new elements.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
That's the puzzling thing, but apparently they need that time to just make it even more awesome. Which, granted, I mean, they're now having an extra 4 months, so if they're not making it more awesome, what the Sam Sweet hell were you doing? Or were you just not even close to being finished in the first place?
I think that's more likely. Like, they might have bitten off more than they can chew, and then wanted to get people excited once they realized, oh, wait, there's a new Gears of War game, or there's a new, I don't know, there's all sorts of new games coming out by October, or at least by the end of the year. Let's throw our hat in there, too. Yeah, we got a game coming out. Check it out. Woo! And then, you know, that was just the marketing people getting a little overzealous, and everyone else in the company going, no, stop. Oh, my God, we're not done.
Now, another possibility that we certainly cannot eliminate here is just the fact that maybe someone else in either the marketing or higher up, or in the, you know, maybe in the numbers side of the business said, you know, there's a lot of big AAA titles coming out in that time frame in the holiday season. You know, maybe the video game dollars will be spread a little thin between all the other games. If we wait a few months, maybe we can have more of those dollars concentrated on our title.
I don't think that's the case at all, personally.
Fair enough.
I mean, you don't usually hear about business people going, let's wait to make some money. To play the devil's advocate here, I mean, kind of have to play the devil's advocate here.
Well, we always like playing devil's advocate, yes. One of us. Just putting it out there,
yeah.
You know, if you wait till February, you can at least have, avoid all those AAA titles and have, I guess, the eyeballs to yourself. Presumably, that's, you know, what I would think as well, but remains to be seen. Now, later on in his big excuse statement, I read that Ken Levine did say that there was a similar experience to this that happened with the first BioShock game, where they had a release date set in stone and announced, but then they delayed it for months and months and months, and it allowed them to make the, well, game that everyone ended up seeing. So, no pressure now.
Well, at
drawing
least,
that parallel.
Well, at least the positive thing for us is that we can say anything about them that we want, and we know that we'll face no repercussions because they're all too busy working on the development. So, they're a bunch of liars, and the game's probably never going to come out. It's the new Duke Nukem forever. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, mercy.
Oh. I'm putting it out there. Despite the fact that they gave the date of February 26, 2013.
A very specific date.
Yeah, a very specific date, February 26, 2013. I'm going out there on a limb and saying, it's never coming out.
You know, in theory, you could apply that Duke Nukem label to
anything?
Any game that gets delayed.
You're right, and I'm going to. Just you wait.
Oh, mercy. Now, some other conspiratorial sorts on the interwebs are wondering and perhaps giving their own take on why this game has been delayed from its set-in-stone release date to 4 months later. One reason that has been spoken of by some industry market analysts is that maybe Take-Two Interactive, the publisher, saw this as an opportunity to maybe BioShock wasn't going to be ready, so then in its October release date, they could slot in maybe the new Grand Theft Auto. That is one theory that is being bandied about. Other ones bandying about also include the mention that maybe, just maybe, that extra time is needed to include multiplayer. into BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, sure. They can say whatever they want. It's never coming out. It's going to be 13 years from now before that game even sees the light of day.
just some other possible theories. Should this game ever see the light of day?
If everyone else is allowed to throw their theories out there, I'm allowed to say it's the next Duke Nukem for every single game that gets delayed. That's just how the internet works, my friends.
Is there anything else you want to add to this?
Nope.
Well, I mean, really, what else is there to say?
See you in 13 years. That's all I got to say.
Okay.
Well. I mean, despite the fact that, once again, they gave the date of February 26th, 2013, quote unquote, I'm just saying.
Whoever they are.
Yeah, whoever they are, Take-Two Interactive.
What do you know?
What do you know? Your game's not coming out ever. It's going to be the next Duke Nukem forever.
Well, you know what? I got to admire your commitment to a cause.
Hey, I said it, and I have to stick by it now.
You took a position, and you're not wavering.
I like to be pleasantly surprised when things don't... when actually companies follow through with plans. Because, you know...
So is that going to be your new approach now? Just expect everything to be the new Duke Nukem, and then yes. When it does come out, hey, it's not the new Duke Nukem.
Yes.
I was wrong, and I get the game.
Exactly.
Yay.
That's exactly it. I figure it's a better way to look at things.
It's okay. It's a rather, well, dour way of looking at things, but...
But ultimately, I get surprised more than everyone else. And that has to count for something.
That's an entirely horrible way of looking at the world. I'm just going to go on record as saying that. An entirely horrible way. But whatever works for you, as we like to say often on this program, whatever floats your boat.
Yes.
You're still wrong, but whatever floats your boat.
Yes.
Shall we move along?
Yes, we shall.
All right. Well, another story that came across the wire this week was a confirmation by Microsoft of what had been rumored for a few weeks prior to their official confirmation was the announcement that they are engaging in a pilot program in a select few, well, in their Microsoft stores down in the good old US of A, of which there's only about 15 to 20 actual Microsoft stores down there. But what they're doing is they're taking a new approach to their retail price structure for the Xbox 360 and Kinect bundle. Now, how it works normally is you go to the store, you pay for the cost up front, you know, the $150, $200, whatever the price of the day is, you take it home, and that is it. Transaction complete. This is a bit different than that. So how it's working in this pilot program is that you pay $99 for the Xbox 360, the 4GB, excuse me, 4GB Xbox 360, as well as the Kinect, which is much cheaper than the other systems currently available on the marketplace. But the trade-off is it requires that you sign up and... be a part of a 2-year paid subscription for Xbox Live.
Yes. A gold subscription.
Yes.
A gold membership.
Yes, a gold membership. Now that's, it's a very different structure, and certainly they'll see how this works out before they roll it out entirely. But if you just do the math on the surface, between just buying the Xbox off the shelf and the Xbox Live Gold membership for 2 years and compare that with this...
And the Kinect.
Compare it with this new program that they have. You're saving money just buying it all up front.
Oh, yeah. Quite a bit.
I believe in the range of $40, $50 is what I believe to be the case. But again, those numbers can waver depending on where you are, if you get a sale, coupons, whatever else.
Yes, but there's also a couple of interesting caveats with this plan. I mean, it's $14.99 per month for this Xbox Live Gold membership, which after 24 months, in case you're too lazy to do the math, that's $360.
Indeed.
And if you decide to cancel your subscription fee or subscription before the contract is up, there is an early termination fee that can run up as high as $250. Sounds like a cell phone thing to me.
It sure does sound like a cell phone thing, and, well, I guess it's not entirely surprising that a company would take a new approach, a cell phone approach to selling their consoles here. Considering that Microsoft, over the past few years, they've had more success with the Xbox 360 not being a, well, not as, being more of an entertainment hub console and means of you accessing, you know, your Netflix, your TV shows, your various ESPN, UFC apps, channels, what have you, rather than being an actual game device. The game device in the future will be a secondary selling point to the fact that you can access all these other different streams of entertainment.
Yeah.
And in that methodology, it becomes a direct competitor to devices like Apple TV, the Roku box,
and traditional TV.
Traditional TV, cable, direct TV, satellite companies.
Yeah.
You know, every other piece of entertainment or media that you can get your hands on. A unique approach, I don't know how I feel about it, just as, well, a consumer who doesn't like paying more than he absolutely has to.
Yeah. Now, if they sweeten the deal a little bit more and maybe made it truly more like cell phone plans and say, free Xbox 360 and, you know, just with an Xbox Live subscription for 2 years, I might consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, though, I'd want to get... I'm also the kind of person who would want to prefer to buy it up front and get a better Xbox 360 than the 4-gig model. Because that's only 4 gigs.
That's really not much.
No, it's not much at all.
So if you're... To go through with that, again, the full thing, the... So basically, at the end of it, if you do the full 2-year contract of Xbox Live Gold at $15 a month, plus the $100 4-gig Xbox 360 and Kinect, you're paying a grand total of $460.
Yeah.
When it's all said and done. Now, for some people, this might be a great deal because they just don't have the money to pay for all of it up front.
Sure.
And maybe the installment thing, essentially what this is, works better.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of forcing yourself to put aside money every month to basically do it. And I understand that's a perfectly valid way for some people. I myself am a final cost kind of guy, and mm-hmm. I don't like seeing that I'm going to be spending even a dollar more, really. It's not really that much of a convenience.
True enough, and also from a marketing perspective, this maybe allows Microsoft to target their console, the Xbox 360, to people who maybe just can't even, you know, aren't able to look at a three-digit price point for something. You know, people.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You know, the people who couldn't afford paying for everything at once.
Yeah.
And, well, here you go. Ultimately, you get more money out of them in the end. It'll be really interesting to see where they go with this, not only if they do follow through, if they expand it to beyond just their retail stores, if they roll it out in a full North American-wide retail release. Not only that, you know that if Microsoft rolls this out, like, nationwide, Sony is going to have to do something.
Yeah.
Because they would just get slaughtered. Yeah. Absolutely slaughtered.
But the thing is, I can see this being very successful.
I can, too. It certainly can. Because, again, the $99 just upfront price point is what I'm sure some people will fixate on, regardless of the fact that in the end, you're paying a lot more, but...
Well, maybe you would have paid that amount regardless. Maybe you wanted to have Xbox Live anyways. So,
this
in
is
that
true.
Sense, it makes sense.
And do have to stress, too, that it is currently a pilot program only in America. Again, at the 15, 20 Microsoft stores that are across the United States. No word yet if this is going to come to Canada, or if it did, what retailers it would actually come to. So if there is any further details on that, how Microsoft plans to roll it out any further, we will certainly bring you that information so you can be informed accordingly. And You know what? It'd be interesting to hear from the people out there as well, the listeners. What is your take on this? How do you feel about a cell phone contract plan pricing scheme applied to your gaming console?
Yeah, drop us a line, thearcade@kick.fm, or on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
So we'll move from that on to an actual game that you'll be able to play on the Xbox 360 coming out in the summertime. As I spoke of the Avengers, they didn't have a game tying into the big summer movie that is the Avengers, but instead The Amazing Spider-Man is not only the movie coming out this summer, which recounts the origins of Spider-Man onto film, because 10 years ago, we got to see for the first time the origins of Spider-Man being committed to film, but, you know, it's different 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, every 10 years you have to retell the same story with different actors, with slightly better technology.
And maybe just a slight variation on the story, but, you know, the same, fundamentally the same thing.
Well, to be fair, they actually do that in the comic world anyway, so it's not really surprising, so.
True, but
yeah, it's different universes, et cetera, et cetera.
No less infuriating, but if you are looking forward to The Amazing Spider-Man this summer, something you should know about the tie-in game. It was rumored back in March when Stan Lee made a comment about it as well, but apparently it's been now confirmed that when you pre-order The Amazing Spider-Man game through Amazon, one of the special bonuses you'll get is a series of missions that will allow you to play as Stan Lee.
Yes, Stan the Man Lee.
Yes, him.
The guy himself, the creator, as it were.
Yes, the creator of Spider-Man and pretty much
the Marvel Universe.
The vast majority of the Marvel Universe, him and Jack Kirby.
Yes.
And Steve Ditko, but Stan Lee being the one who gets the most recognition, always gets a cameo in the Marvel movies. He will be in the Amazing Spider-Man game, and you're probably asking yourself, well, that's neat, but how the hell would that work? Well, you see, they did something very neat with Stan Lee here. He gets to borrow Spider-Man's powers and whip through the city, through the buildings of Manhattan, through the skies of New York, as if he were actually Spider-Man. But it's Stan Lee with Spider-Man's powers in a Spider-Man video game. I'm pretty sure the universe is soon to collapse in on itself.
Yes, but Activision does promise a special surprise at the end of the Stan Lee missions, so I guess if playing as Stan Lee alone wasn't incentive enough to pre-order this title, this big surprise at the end of the mission should sweeten the deal, maybe?
Hopefully, but that's the neat thing. If you go and get the game at, or pre-order the game through, say, maybe GameStop or EB Games here in Canada, you don't get Stan Lee.
No.
The Stan Lee thing is exclusive to Amazon. What you get through GameStop is you get some series of missions featuring Rhino.
Oh, great.
The villain Rhino, who isn't Stan Lee.
No, and who I always thought was a crappy villain, personally.
He makes a good B-villain, more of a henchman than a main guy.
Yeah.
He's pretty one-dimensional.
Very one-dimensional, especially if you watch the 67 Spider-Man series. Very, very one-dimensional.
So, yes, that is very neat. There's a screenshot that was released of Stan Lee in full suit and tie swinging through the air on his webs. And it's... I don't think the man's ever looked, more vibrant and full of life.
Yes.
But it is awesome, and it's Stan Lee, so ultimately he does deserve whatever comes his way. I don't mean that insidiously, just positively.
Yeah, positively. The man's a legend. Let him do legendary things.
Exactly. And we'll move right along now to another item that came across the wire this week of, a new game announcement.
Yeah.
That, of a new MMO that's going to be coming to the PC and Mac next year, which will be the MMO adaptation of a very popular RPG series.
Yes, that series being the Elder Scrolls series.
Perhaps you've heard of it.
You might have heard of it, especially most recently with the Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, which I've sunk about 100 hours into.
You, and I'm sure probably many others, have, well, have bested your total.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't... There's a few story arcs I haven't even started yet. But still, 100 hours. I could see myself putting 100 more in if I had more time to do it. But
if you had those 100 hours available to you.
If I had 100 hours in front of me, I would spend a few of them playing Skyrim. But yes, I guess MMO fans are a whole other kettle of fish to fry, and Bethesda wants to cast as wide a net as possible, and they've decided to make a thing called The Elder Scrolls Online.
And now you'd probably be wondering, okay, well, Elder Scrolls Online, that sounds neat, that sounds cool. Yeah, it does sound cool, it does sound neat, and that's, for me, that's kind of where it stops, because the thing... Is it wrong to classify it as another MMO?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not an MMO player. I know lots of people who are, and that's fine. But it seems like if something is not intended originally to be an MMO, and then you kind of shoehorn it into an MMO, following the MMO formula, does that not kind of detract from two genres or two things?
You'd think,
but my big problem here is that in this release they said that you'll get to go through popular locations in Cyrodiil, which is the world that Tamriel, which is the world in the Elder Scrolls, including the lands of Cyrodiil and Skyrim. But they also mention Elsweyr, which fans of the series might recount as being where the cat people come from.
Mm-hmm.
The Khajiit, as it were. And I always thought, hey, that'd be a cool game. But not being an MMO player, this kind of gets to me now that this is the first time you get to play it Elsweyr. I mean, not counting potentially playing it in any of those old... the first couple ones for DOS or whatever, which, to be honest, I never really played.
Now, in fairness, the Elsweyr and Cyrodiil that you'll see in this MMO... won't necessarily be the same as what you find in Skyrim. Apparently, the this
Elder Oblivion is Cyrodiil, and Skyrim is Skyrim.
Indeed,
Elsweyr is not in a game yet.
Fair point, but the point I'm trying to make is that apparently, Elder Scrolls Online will be set apparently a millennium before the latest Elder Scrolls game, and it will see be set during a time when Daedric Prince Molag Bal is apparently, well, he's doing some bad stuff.
Yes, wreaking havoc on the realm in Molag Bal fashion.
Etc., etc.
Yes.
Apparently the game will feature three-player factions, PvP combat, and many other aspects of the MMORPG universe that are in many other MMORPGs.
Yes.
The problem is that when you have a series like The Elder Scrolls... You can do something new with it. You can do a new combat scheme. You can do a unique whatever to it and really make it your own and leverage that brand recognition of the Elder Scrolls and maybe set, you know, the MMORPG genre in a bit of a different direction. But from all we've read, all that there is of the information available online about Elder Scrolls, the MMO, it sounds like they're doing Warcraft.
Yes, World of Warcraft... Again.
Now, call me crazy. You certainly wouldn't be the first. But if you're doing Warcraft, is not the problem that the people who want to play Warcraft are already playing Warcraft?
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, they've apparently alienated some people with their new Mists of Pandaria thing, but how many people? Probably not that many.
Now, sadly, there isn't, you know, a dearth of information available yet for the Elder Scrolls Online MMO game, but from everything that is available, I'm sorry, I'm not impressed. I'm not intrigued, and you've lost me.
Well, I'll be interested just to know, you know, as an Elder Scrolls fan, to see what the factions are and maybe just to hear about it. But I really don't like MMO games. That's just my personal thing. That's just, yeah.
Now, well, the Elder Scrolls game, they've kind of built up the this experience of being one player in a very, very large universe. That's what they have going for them. And it works.
Yes. You're not one amongst many players doing similar quests. You're not all the Dragonborn.
No.
I mean, come on, really? That would be ridiculous.
That would certainly be not worthwhile, but we'll see if more info about this game is released. Apparently it's going to be on display with more news coming out about it at this year's E3 event, which we should say is roughly a month away.
Yes. It's getting close.
It's drawing ever closer. It is drawing nigh, and we will certainly bring you, during that time, all the events, all the news, all the transactions, happenings, and doings and goings-on from the event, and recap it as best we can to keep you all informed. Maybe one day will happen when we're actually reporting live from the show floor, but this is not the year. Perhaps next year.
Yeah, perhaps next year. We'll see.
Fingers crossed, toes crossed as well.
Indeed.
But turns out that the clock we have for this week is starting to run down on available time for us, so maybe, just maybe, we should squeak in a blast from the past for this week.
Yes, now this week, unlike other weeks where we talk about movies or video games or television shows to check out, this week, it's actually a webcomic. Now, are you going to say webcomic? How much in the past can some webcomics be? I mean, it's still a relatively new medium.
Exactly.
Well, this webcomic is 14 years old. And I've been following it for, well, not as much now, but almost that long. I'm speaking of a little thing called Pokey the Penguin.
Which, don't feel bad if you haven't heard about it, but check it out.
Yes, it's been referenced in a lot of different diverse places. And in the video game world, actually, I believe it was Hitman 3 that had a couple of references to it, believe it or not. It's basically just a surreal nonsense webcomic that really you might not understand. And we might be wrong for saying that this should be our blast from the past, but I've enjoyed it for many years just because of how ridiculous it is. And yeah, yourself?
It's a bit of an acquired taste. I think we should say that as well. It's not quite, I guess, as obviously funny as maybe some other webcomics like SMBC Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal.
Yeah.
Or say maybe, you know, stuff that The Oatmeal has done.
Yeah.
But Pokey the Penguin, if you can wrap your head around it and what's going on, it centers around the main character, Pokey, who is a penguin.
Yes.
And
in the Arctic Circle.
Yes, who has adventures sometimes with his friends, Mr. Nutty, and Little Girl.
Skeptopotamus.
Yes.
Et cetera. There's a wide cast of characters.
And if you can get your head around that and the fact that it's looks like it's still done in MS Paint.
Yeah, I think it's just a few different like template things he copies and pastes and then just writes things in with paint. But it's never changed, and that's the charm of it.
It's not just absurdist humor, it's deep in the vein of absurdist humor. Absurdist
yes.
And surrealist humor. If that's your kind of thing, non sequiturs as well. Pokey the Penguin. Don't feel bad, again, if you haven't heard about it. Well, it's kind of been around for 14 years, so you've got a lot of back issues to catch up on.
Yes.
So you'll certainly have a bunch of time to do that between now and next week when we join you. Don't worry. Quiz to follow, though.
Yes.
We expect you to bone up on all your Pokey the Penguin knowledge. Google search, Pokey the Penguin. It's not hard, folks.
And I will link to it on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
Not only can you find the link for Pokey the Penguin on our website, you'll also be able to find a copy of this week's show, next week's show, last week's show, and every other week's show because, well, thearcadeshow.com is the home of the arcade. And it just makes sense to put everything there. It's yes. so easy. You will be able to hear us again next Friday night, as well as next Sunday night on 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's indie station, and several other times throughout the course of the week. Just make sure you have it tuned in locked, because you never quite know when we're going to tune up. tune your dial. It was a radio joke. It was bad, but I made it anyway.
Yes.
And now I'm referencing the fact that it was bad. So it's funny, you know. It's funny that way. But if you didn't think that was a funny joke, email us, thearcade@kick.fm, or drop us a line on our website, thearcadeshow.com. Until next week, everybody, good night.
Good night.